street and whistled for Larkin. A moment later, he joined them.
How bad?
Danny exhaled. He said my mom owes him $200. Owes a bunch of other dealers, too. Next time he sees me, he wants his money.
They're still using money?
Skeeter is, I guess. Maybe all the dealers. Most people around here don't have checking accounts. That's why there's so many check-cashing places and Western Unions. People don't use credit cards or ATMs in this neighborhood.
Larkin, you have any cash?
He shook his head.
Not a dollar.
I don't either.
Colt frowned.
Will Skeeter leave his territory?
No, never. Big Nicky works up here. Skeeter knows not to cross him.
All right, let's skirt the edge. If we can make it home without being followed or getting into any more trouble, we can decide what to do about Skeeter later.
Colt filled her and Larkin in about his kidnapping, and Danny fought to keep her emotions in check. She knew Colt had been in trouble. She shot Larkin a glance. He shrugged.
What's the chance the guy will come after us?
Probably low, but we should go back to the apartment where we know it's secure.
Danny nodded and let Larkin once again take the lead. This time she kept pace, pointing out the edges of Skeeter's territory and ensuring they stayed on the right side. An hour later, they arrived at the apartment building without incident. They eased around the back and slipped in the rear door. Thanks to their work a few days before, the front appeared abandoned. But it was actually the most secure entrance on the block. 2x4s and plywood blocked any attempt at breaking in, combined with heaps of trash behind them. Even if an enterprising person worked their way inside, they would have to contend with broken glass and rats before they made it to the back. Danny took the stairs two at a time and beat both men to the top. She opened the apartment door and waited. Her heart thudded against her chest in exertion and relief. As soon as Colt and Larkin slipped in, she shut and locked it and leaned against the wall. "Colt is safe." She said the three words over and over again in her head until she believed them to be true. Colt reached out and gave her arm a squeeze.
"I'm calling a meeting."
Danny nodded as he walked away, not trusting her voice to stay even. She closed her eyes and thought about how dangerous their current situation had become. They couldn't stay in Eugene. It wasn't worth the odds. After her heart slowed, Danny peeled herself off the wall and took a seat in the living room. Everyone else was already there. Harvey, Gloria, and their grandson, Will. Melody and her brother, Doug. Colt and Larkin. Even little Lottie, the Yorkie, sat on Melody's lap, licking a front paw. Colt cleared his throat.
"As you all know, we've been scraping by so far outside of the militia's control. But things are deteriorating rapidly. I don't believe staying here any longer is sustainable or wise. I called this meeting to propose a new course of action."
He paused and glanced around the room.
"It's time to leave Eugene."
At first, no one spoke. Melody glanced at Gloria. Harvey glanced down at his grandson. Larkin leaned back in his chair and closed his eyes. It was like Colt had told him the Ducks wouldn't win the division, or there was no such thing as Santa. Danny didn't understand it. She'd been saying they should leave Eugene for days, even before the Wilkinsons and Harpers lost their houses in the fire, even before she was shot and left for dead. They couldn't stay in a town where a madman wanted to kill them and make a show of it. She shifted on her chair and waited. At last, Harvey broke the silence.
"Where do you propose we go?"
"South. The farther south we go, the better the winter weather. I know it's only April, but we need to think about freezing temperatures and snowfall."
"I have friends in Reno." Melody smiled at everyone as she tucked her legs beneath her. "We could head there." Colt thought it over.
Reno's too big, but Lake Tahoe is an option. It should have fish and plenty of cabins.
Harvey leaned back and shook his head.
They're, what, 500 miles from here? I'll die of old age before we get there.
Not necessarily.
Larkin opened his eyes.
We have vehicles. Don't forget that.
Colt nodded.
The electric car is dead, but the Corolla we found in the garage has half a tank. The Humvee's range isn't great, but somewhere we'll have diesel to siphon.
He glanced around at the seven other people in the room.
It'll be a tight squeeze, but we can make do.
What about food, clothes, shelter while we're on the road?
Doug scooted forward on the love seat and braced his elbows on his knees.
We've got a good thing going here. The place is secure. It's warm. We've been capturing rainwater and scavenging for food. I say we stay.
Danny spoke up. There's too many bad people still hanging out. Drug dealers my mom used to know. Addicts looking for a fix. It's too dangerous.
We've been doing fine.
She hesitated, but Colt gave her the go-ahead. One of them stopped me today. Said my mom owes him money. If I don't pay him, he's going to come looking.
Your mother's debts don't have anything to do with us.
Doug, Melody admonished her brother, but he ignored her.
It's true. We shouldn't have to leave because Danny's got a problem with some thug.
Danny crossed her arms and focused on the floor.
It's not just her.
Colt shifted in his seat.
I was ambushed today while on a run.
He turned and showed off the blood on his head.
Lucky for me, the guy was too weak to kill me. But it took some serious work to get away. He's still out there, looking for me.
Great.
Doug rolled his eyes.
Where have I heard this before? You could always stay behind.
Larkin stayed in a slouch, but the edge in his voice made his meaning clear.
Gloria held up her hands.
Let's not fight. Doug, I hear you on wanting everyone to stay. Colt and Danny, I understand why you want to leave. Melody, what do you think?
The younger woman glanced at her brother before responding.
I think we should go.
Doug made a noise, but she ignored it. Jarvis will be looking for us. At some point, he'll come this way. We need to be far away from Eugene when that happens. I don't think we would survive another attack.
She reached for her brother's arm.
I don't want to go through that again, Doug.
Doug's snotty look faded, and he scooted closer to his sister on the couch.
He reached out and squeezed her knee.
Are you sure?
Very.
He exhaled with a nod.
All right. Then I guess I'm in.
Colt turned to Harvey.
What do you say?
I don't like it, but I know you're right. Leaving is the only option.
Then it's settled. We can get everything assembled and packed today and hit the road first thing tomorrow morning.
Danny stayed in her seat while everyone else stood up and stretched before wandering off to their respective rooms. She knew they had to leave, but it still filled her with dread. Driving all the way to some lake on the border of California? Without gear or supplies or even warm coats, how would they make it across two states? She chewed on her lip as she thought about all the things that could go wrong. From Jarvis finding them as they headed out, to the Humvee breaking down in the middle of nowhere, to not finding a place to stay once they made it. Leaving Eugene was the right call. But could they really make it that far? She glanced up to find Colt watching her from the kitchen. He'd stacked up all the bottles of water on the counter and was starting in on the little food they hadn't yet eaten. She managed a smile. Maybe she was overreacting. Maybe it wouldn't be so hard.
Day 31. Chapter 8. Melody. 672 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon. 7 a.m. Steady raindrops hummed in the background, while Melody balanced two bottles of water on her hip. Unable to sleep, she'd crawled out of bed at 5 and stood on the edge of the balcony, staring out over the town she'd called home her entire life. The clouds hid the stars, and through the rain, she couldn't see a single light. The university sat dark this chilly, wet morning. She glanced down at the water she cradled like an infant and forced a dry swallow. Kids had always been on the horizon. She wanted a family someday. Now they seemed like a distant dream, almost as ethereal as electricity. Never would she tickle chubby little marshmallow feet, or dance barefoot in the grass with a little girl that had her eyes. At 27, Melody felt for the first time like she'd wasted her life. Sure, she'd become a veterinary technician and helped pet dogs and cats and even a pig or two when they came to the vet. But she'd put so many things on hold. Travel, a boyfriend, family. She hadn't even read a good book in months. Now there wouldn't be any new books, or bookstores to find them in. No coffee shops to while away the morning. No museums in which she could lose an afternoon. The buildings were all still standing, but for how long? How long would any of it last without the government propping them up? When they hadn't heard from the mayor or the governor or the president, how could they expect to ever go back to normal? A bottle slipped, and she clutched it tighter. The closest she would ever get to a baby in her arms.
Need a hand?
Melody spun around. Larkin stood a few feet away, freshly shaven and smiling. A month ago, she wouldn't have given him a second glance. A soldier? No way. But now... He'd risked his own life to save hers, and turned his back on the military he'd loved. She smiled back. There's 4 more on the counter. I couldn't carry them. Larkin nodded and turned away. She'd never noticed before how his eyes caught the light and sparkled. Melody followed him into the kitchen and waited as he picked up the bottles. One slipped from his grip, and he ended up carting them all in front of him like a bushel of apples.
I don't know how you women balance anything on a hip.
Instinct, I guess. He stilled.
Did you have any...
kids? Melody shook her head. No, I'd wanted to, but...
You thought you had more time?
She nodded.
Sounds familiar.
Larkin walked to the door and bent to turn the handle. He bobbled the armload and almost dropped all the water, but managed to hang on.
I told myself I didn't need to settle down until 40. What I wouldn't give now for a plot of land and a white picket fence.
Melody eased through the open door and followed Larkin down the hall. You're serious? He nodded.
Me, a wife, a couple of kids, and some land. We could make that work for years and never need to see another living soul.
He paused at the landing.
It's too late for that, I'm afraid.
Melody fell silent as she descended the stairs, only resuming the conversation when she reached the lobby. You really think it's over?
What?
A normal life. Larkin paused at the door to the garage.
This is normal. Now, anyway.
He pushed the door to the garage open with his back. Colt caught it on the other side.
How's everything upstairs?
Everyone else is still asleep. Colt nodded.
We need to canvass the area for some gas. A few containers if we can find them, too.
How much fuel does the sedan have?
Not enough. Maybe 200 miles. The Humvee is worse.
Melody let Colt take the bottles from her arms. How are we going to get to Lake Tahoe with so little?
We have to siphon it. Larkin and I are about to go scouting. Hopefully we'll get lucky and find some diesel, too. But first things first.
Larkin set his bottles in the back of the vehicle and turned around.
We eat some breakfast.
Melody laughed and shook her head. Men, all you ever think about is food.
Larkin grinned and strode past her.
Not all the time, Ms. Harper.
She watched him walk away until the door to the building shut behind him.
You stare too long, you might go blind.
Melody spun around. I wasn't staring.
And I'm not telling.
Colt wiped his hands on a rag and nodded at the door.
He's a good man, Melody. You could do worse.
She hesitated, unsure what to say. After a moment, she settled on the truth. There's nothing going on between us.
Do you want there to be?
I don't know. Melody pushed her hair behind her ear. Would it bother you? Colt tilted his head.
Me? Don't think I have any say in the matter.
She ran her tongue over her lower lip. She didn't know why his opinion mattered, but it did. So that's a no?
It wouldn't bother me.
Good. She stood there, not sure what else to say. She shifted her weight back and forth on her feet, all of a sudden awkward and shy. Colt's expression didn't change.
You should probably get going.
Melody nodded and turned around. She could feel his eyes on her all the way inside. After climbing the 5 flights of stairs, she paused at the door to the apartment. Maybe a family wasn't impossible now. She thought about Larkin's comment about a house with some land and a white picket fence. If the right man came along and they could find a place to settle down. The door to the apartment opened and her brother and Harvey spilled out, both carrying bags and rifles. They stopped when they saw her.
You okay, Mel?
She forced a smile. Just tired.
You can probably sleep on the drive.
She nodded at her brother as he walked past her. Whatever the future held, they needed to leave Eugene to make it happen. It was time they got on with it. An hour later, Melody was back downstairs, standing outside the 2 cars along with everyone else. Lottie sat in the crook of her arm, quiet and still. Colt raised a hand for quiet.
Larkin and I have siphoned all the gas from nearby cars we could manage. It's given us a mostly full tank in the Corolla. As soon as we find a vehicle running on diesel, we'll do the same with the Humvee.
Larkin pulled out a piece of paper with a hand-drawn map.
Thanks to Harvey's handiwork, we have a rough idea of where we're going.
He pointed at a star.
This is where we are.
He traced a line from the star to a meandering blue strip halfway across the page.
This is the Willamette River. The main bridges across are 3 highways. The 569, the 105, and the 5. The lower 2 will be guarded by Jarvis's troops for sure.
Doug spoke up.
So how do we get across?
There's a small bridge here, just south of the 569. Harvey thinks it's our best shot.
It's a lot closer to the university than the 569.
Doug shook his head.
I say we try the highway first.
We're in a stolen Humvee. If the militia has any lookouts, they'll spot us and put it together. We'll be too exposed on the highway.
Melody stared at the map while the men argued about the best way to cross the river. At last, she spoke up. I don't think we should cross the river at all. Let's head west, away from Eugene and Springfield. We can get away from Jarvis faster and easier that way. Then loop around and head southeast.
That would add hundreds of miles to the journey.
Harvey walked up to the map and pointed.
We need to take 58 through the National Forest. If we head west, there's no good way to get there.
What are you talking about? We can take I-5 straight south. It'll save hours. Colt shook his head.
Not gonna happen. I-5 is probably a parking lot by now. Think about all the people that ran out of gas trying to get somewhere. It'll be full of looters and thieves. We need to stay on the back roads. Go unnoticed.
Melody frowned. You're sure there isn't another way?
Not that we know of without a map.
I lost all my maps in the fire.
Harvey kicked at the dirt as he remembered.
I can get us to 58 without one. But I don't know much more than that.
Then it's settled.
Larkin handed Colt the hand-drawn map. We head to the smaller bridge first. If it's out, we regroup, head up to the 569. Melody still didn't like the idea. Who knew what waited on the other side of the river? She ran a hand over Lottie's fur. The little dog would have to sit on her lap the entire drive to Lake Tahoe if they didn't find a carrier to use. It wasn't the best mode of travel, but Melody wouldn't give up Lottie for the world. The dog would just have to adjust, like they all did. She hoisted the last of the supplies into the back of the car, and everyone divided up into the vehicles. Colt took the sedan with the Wilkinses, and Larkin motioned for Melody to join him, Doug, and Danny in the Humvee. Colt pulled out of the parking spot, and Larkin followed. Melody watched out the window while they turned onto the road. The rain pelted the car in a million little goodbyes. She was leaving her hometown behind for good.
Chapter 9. Colt. Streets of Eugene, Oregon. 9 a.m. He spotted the wreckage a few seconds before anyone else. Colt slowed the car. The windshield wipers sloshed the rain, but did nothing to hide the obvious. Jarvis blew all the bridges. Colt nodded in Harvey's direction. That's why no one from Springfield is coming to Eugene. They can't get through. After finding the small bridge blown to bits with not even the foundation left as evidence, Colt's optimism had faded. He backtracked to Highway 569, expecting the worst. Finding the highway's bridge shorn in two turned any thoughts of an easy passage out of Eugene to dust. They would either have to drive all the way around like Melody suggested in the first place, or find another way across. Colt sat in the car, listening to the raindrops and windshield wipers, lost in his own frustrated thoughts. No one said a word, not even teenaged Will in the back seat. Ever since the ambush and the fires, the boy had been quiet, docile even. Colt couldn't tell if it was a good sign. The kid had lived a pretty sheltered life before the power went out. Did the last weeks of gunshots and fires and ambushes kill Will's spirit, or awaken something new? Colt turned to Harvey at last. Is there another way across? Not a man-made one. Harvey caught his wife's attention. Gloria, do you remember that cut-through we used to use up by the Harrelson farm?
That old thing? No one's used it for years. And we're in a car. We would never make it.
Harvey reached for the map and pointed to a curve in the river. If we follow the frontage road for about a mile, there used to be a family farm tucked in the bend. In the low rain months, we crossed the river on four-wheelers. There was a sandbar on this side, and the river broke into smaller tributaries we could jump.
Colt peered out at the rain. It had been coming down thick for hours and had rained on and off for the last few days. Good for catching rainwater, bad for crossing a river.
What's the chance it's passable now?
I don't even know if it's still there.
Harvey handed the map back to Colt.
But it's worth a shot, isn't it?
After a moment, Colt nodded. Can't hurt to look. He rolled down the car window, stuck his hand out, and whirled it in the air, signaling a turnaround to Larkin. They rolled in their two-vehicle caravan down the frontage road, Colt on the lookout for a bend in the river or any place low enough to cross. Harvey thumped the window on his side of the car.
This is it!
Colt parked and climbed out. What used to be a sandbar was now a shallow widening of the river. Water lapped at the bank, spreading all the way to the other side. It appeared passable in the shallows, but the middle ran swift and deep. The car would never make it. He swiped the rain out of his eyes as Larkin came to stand beside him.
This is the best shot, isn't it?
Afraid so. Can the Humvee make it?
It's got a deep water kit, assuming there's not a chasm 10 feet deep.
Yeah, we can get across. Larkin leaned back to look at the little car. But that thing doesn't stand a chance. Colt rubbed the beard on his chin.
It's already mid-morning. If we circle back around town to the west, we'll be hours from anywhere when the sun sets.
We'll run out of diesel long before then.
Larkin glanced up to the sky, calculating in his head.
It's lower than I thought. We've got 100 miles if we're lucky. 80 is more likely. Shit, that would barely get them out of Eugene. Even if we had enough diesel, the Humvee will never fit all of us and the gear.
Colt glanced at the vehicle. It was an old army Humvee, designed to seat 4 with room for gear in the back.
We can make it work for a few miles until we find another car.
Larkin squinted at Colt. That blow to the head must have scrambled your brains. Even if the girls sit on the floor, what do we do with all the gear?
Colt snorted out a laugh.
I'm not addled, just desperate.
He wiped his mouth and leaned closer.
We can't be on the road with everyone into the night. We'll be sitting ducks. Anyone with half a brain and scruples to match would ambush us.
Larkin turned his attention back to the river.
It'll be a wet crossing, assuming we make it.
Colt figured as much.
Don't tell them. It'll only make them more resistant. We've got to find a place to hole up that's dry and has a good defensible perimeter. We can do that if we head into Springfield. It'll have gas and diesel.
And another car.
Colt nodded. The other way is just forest.
Larkin wiped the rain from his eyes and stared out at the river.
The lowest point is up there where it bends. We'll be halfway into the river before the water comes in. Even if we get across, it won't be easy.
It never is.
Colt clapped him on the back and headed to the car to break the news.
This is never going to work.
Gloria sat in the back with Lottie on her lap and her grandson at her feet. Harvey sat on the other side with Doug wedged into the footwell and Colt crouched on the corrugated divider in the middle. Not the most comfortable Humvee ride, that was for damn sure.
Melody shifted in the front, where she shared a seat with Danny.
I can't feel my feet.
Danny laughed.
I can't see my feet.
Colt shook his head.
If we can get across this river, then we'll be able to find another car.
Larkin eased the Humvee into the water. It bounced and slipped on the sand, and Larkin slowed even more. The water lapped at the hood and the doors. The river was swallowing them whole.
Hold your valuables up, everybody.
Larkin clipped each word with tension.
It's steeper than I thought.
What does that mean?
Danny twisted around as the Humvee plunged ahead into the river.
Colt?
He wiped his mouth, but Melody's scream filled the silence.
My feet! They're getting wet!
Will jumped up from the floor and clambered up on top of his grandmother's lap.
Water's coming in! Everywhere!
Doug scrambled to half-stand, practically on top of Harvey. Lottie let out a frantic bark and jumped at Colt, clawing her way up onto the divider. Water sloshed against the floorboards, first a little puddle, then more and more, until it threatened to spill over laps and bags.
Colt thrust his backpack up in the air. Others followed suit. They looked like a bad sitcom come to life. Only there wouldn't be a sound stage and a wardrobe trailer when they reached the other side.
The vehicle lurched into a dip in the riverbed, and the water crested over Gloria's knees. Melody shrieked.
It's okay, everyone. I know what I'm doing.
Larkin steered the Humvee through the water, over and down rocks hidden beneath the surface of the water.
We could drive this thing deeper than I am tall, and the engine would keep running.
That doesn't make me feel any better.
Melody clutched the door while Danny held onto the seat back. Most of the color had drained from Gloria's face as she clutched her grandson to her chest.
Doug gripped the back of Larkin's seat with a grimace.
Even Harvey had grown pensive and still. The river splashed over the hood and Larkin slowed.
It's going to get a little dicey now. Hang on.
He gripped the steering wheel with both hands and Colt took a deep breath. So far, Larkin proved himself to be an excellent driver, although Colt knew at this point in his career he probably never sat behind the wheel. Majors didn't drive anymore. The front of the Humvee disappeared beneath the water and a torrent rushed inside.
We're going to drown in this stupid tin can!
Melody's shout pierced through the grinding of the gears and the rain, but Larkin grinned. He leaned toward the passenger seat.
Steel and aluminum, to be accurate, not tin.
She cursed at him, and he eased down on the accelerator. The Humvee lurched, and for the first time since entering the river, began its ascent. The vehicle gained momentum, rumbling up and over a chunk of rocky river bottom. Colt exhaled. They might just make it. Everyone fell silent. Harvey closed his eyes as he clutched the door. Gloria held on to her grandson like he would drag her to safety. Even Melody stopped mumbling. The Humvee rocked and skidded up the muddy bank, but Larkin did it. Water poured out of the floorboards and the tires crunched over the sandy shore of the river. The tires dug into the road's shoulder and Larkin eased it up onto the asphalt before shifting to park. They had crossed the river. Melody reached out the second he let go of the steering wheel and swatted Larkin on the arm.
"That's for making fun of me,"
she hit him harder.
"That's for driving straight into that dip in the river."
She curled her hand in a fist and tried to punch him, but he caught her swing with his open palm. "What's that one for?"
"Getting my shoes all wet, you jerk."
Larkin let her hand go and laughed so hard it shook the back seat. "What's a little river crossing if there's not an element of surprise?" He turned to Colt. "Am I right?" Colt shook his head and tried to contain his own laughter. "Just find us another car, will you?"
"Yes, sir,"
Larkin winked before turning his attention back to the road.
Chapter 10. Danny. Streets of Springfield, Oregon, 11 a.m. Larkin drove the Humvee through the streets of Springfield just above a crawl. The town reminded Danny of pictures of war zones she'd seen in history class. Blown apart buildings reduced to rubble, trash in the streets, a car turned black from soot. 30 days without power, and the residents of Springfield had torn the town apart. For all that she hated Colonel Jarvis and what he did to her and her grandmother, his men kept Eugene orderly. She frowned as she stared out the tinted windows. They passed a row of shops, and Larkin slowed to get a better look. A restaurant with overturned tables and a burned and blackened kitchen. A grocery store with nothing left but broken glass and destroyed shelves. A massive freezer unit sat on its side, door hanging open and empty. It was also senseless. Danny pulled her sweatshirt closer around her body and tucked her hands inside her sleeves. No one inside the Humvee said a word, not even Will. They all stared, open-mouthed and confused, at the remains of the town. Melody shifted on the seat they shared, and Danny risked a glance in the woman's direction. No color in her cheeks, no fire in her eyes, nothing but shock and dismay. Just like Danny. Only Colt and Larkin didn't seem fazed. Maybe they had seen it all before in another country halfway around the world. Danny turned back to the window and caught the glimpse of a body sprawled out on the sidewalk, dead and decomposing. Every block held more of the same, but the farther they drove, the more life Danny spotted. A face peering out from a gaping window, a flash of light in an apartment 3 stories off the ground. A blur of movement in a shop cordoned off with steel security bars. The town wasn't empty, not by a long shot. She twisted around. "I don't have a good feeling about this." Colt kept his eyes on the road.
"We don't have a choice. We need another car and fuel. A city is the best place to find both."
The Humvee slowed and Danny shifted her gaze. A massive dumpster blocked 3/4 of the street. Larkin straightened up in the driver's seat.
"I'll need to jump the curb. Hold on."
He eased the Humvee up onto the sidewalk and eased toward the dumpster. Melody shouted, "Watch out!" A woman jumped in front of the vehicle and Larkin slammed on the brakes. Everyone flew forward in their seats. Danny hit the dash and Melody fell on top of her. The Humvee swayed with the aftershocks.
"Help me! You've got to help me!"
The woman rushed forward, arms thrust up in the air as she came around to Larkin's window. Her palms landed smack on the glass.
"Please, I need to get out of here."
Larkin eased the Humvee forward a foot, and the woman scrabbled at the door.
Stop! You'll run her over!
Melody twisted around, and Danny almost lost purchase on the seat. She needs help.
Not ours.
Larkin eased the vehicle forward another foot, but the woman kept hanging on.
I've got a daughter. She's sick and needs medicine. Please.
Melody spun around to the back.
We can't ignore her.
Yes, we can. And we will.
Colt kept his voice even, but Danny could hear the tension in it. He was worried. She glanced out the window, and her stomach hit the floor.
More are coming from the right. I count four from the storefront on the corner.
Danny squinted to get a better view. Two men and two women. No weapons that I can see.
Colt leaned forward.
Speed it up, Larkin. We don't need a mob.
Larkin hit the gas, and the woman still scrabbling against the door shrieked as she lost her grip.
What are you doing? She needs us.
Melody turned to Danny.
Open the door. I want to get out.
Danny's eyes went wide.
Are you crazy? You're going to get us all killed.
No, I'm not. That woman needs help. We can do something.
It's called driving.
Danny pointed out the window.
Look around you, Melody. These people aren't coming out of the ashes because they want to invite us home for a glass of iced tea and a piece of pie. They want to take advantage.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do.
Colt chimed in.
Danny's right. We're a giant moving target in this thing. People see it and they think we're military come to save them. When they find out we're not, they'll be furious. It won't end well for anyone.
Melody shook her head. I don't believe you. It's only been a month. Good people wouldn't turn bad in a month. She reached past Danny for the door, but Danny grabbed her by the shoulders. She pinned her to the seat back.
You're not listening. We stop this car and it's over. A mob will be on us before you can get five words out. You think Jarvis was bad? He'll seem like a piece of cake compared to a horde of angry, starving people.
Melody scrunched up her face.
How would you know?
Have you ever been so hungry you stole? Have you ever been consumed by the need for food so bad you'd do anything, say anything to get it?
Melody stilled.
Danny almost spat.
I have. And it's a real bitch, so don't you sit there on your high horse and tell me to open the door.
I know what these people are going through. Only they have it worse.
Harvey spoke up from the back.
As much as it hurts, Melody, Danielle is right. We can't stop here. It's too dangerous. We have to think about our own survival. We have to put the needs of the people inside this vehicle first.
Doug added his own voice to the mix.
I don't like it either, Mel, but Harvey's right. We have to think about all of us right now.
Melody's brows dipped low as she focused on her brother.
It's not right.
Nothing is going to be right in this town again.
Larkin accelerated down a clear section of the street and left the gaggle of people behind. He turned south and headed toward State Road 58 and Lake Tahoe.
If we don't find a place to hole up for the night and some damn fuel for this beast of a vehicle, we won't be any better off. Hell, we'll be worse.
Danny let Melody go, and she sagged against the seat. It had to be hard for a woman like her, who had taken food and shelter and basic necessities for granted, to transition to this new way of life. For once, Danny was thankful she'd had a terrible time of it. At least she didn't mind the hunger pains and the dirty hair.
Colt spoke up from the back.
Everyone keep your eyes out for other people on the streets, and a place that could work to make camp. It needs to be secure and unobtrusive.
They drove around Springfield for what seemed like hours, finding nothing but more strangers desperate for hope they couldn't deliver. No diesel, no shelter, no food.
Larkin kept glancing down at the dash every minute or so. They were going to run out of fuel.
Danny chewed on her lip and stared out at the town. After driving through most of downtown, they transitioned into a residential area where the houses were more or less intact.
Maybe we could find an empty house and use it.
No fuel in a house, Larkin shifted up front. Pretty soon no fuel in this Humvee either.
Colt leaned forward. Let's find a restaurant, fast food or quick service.
I hate to break it to you, but the drive-thru won't be open.
Colt cracked a smile. That's what I'm hoping for. He made eye contact with Danny, and something in the way he looked at her made her pause. He was optimistic. It didn't make sense. She turned to look out the window and watch. A few miles down the road, she tapped on the glass.
There's a Chili's there on the corner.
She couldn't keep the excitement out of her voice. The windows are boarded up. I don't see a car. Larkin turned the corner and eased the Humvee over toward the restaurant.
I always liked their southwestern egg rolls. Weird, but good.
He drove around to the service entrance and parked in between a dumpster and the back door.
I hope you've got more than just a craving for comfort food.
Colt handed a rifle and Larkin took it.
If I'm right, we'll find everything we need. Doug, you stay here as guard. Larkin, Danny, and I will clear the building.
Danny nodded and climbed out into the damp Oregon air. Chapter 11. Danny. Chili's, Springfield, Oregon, 2 p.m. While Larkin picked the back door, Colt pulled Danny aside.
We don't know what's on the other side of that door. Those boarded-up windows means either the manager took some precautions, or someone's inside and doesn't want to be found.
Danny hoped for option number one. Larkin stood up and Colt stepped back, gun aimed and ready. Danny sucked in a breath. It wasn't any different than the neighborhood searches she'd been doing all week, but she couldn't stop the tremor in her hands. Larkin turned the handle and pulled the door open. The misty light from outside lit a wedge of linoleum, and Colt took the lead. Danny eased in behind him and Larkin followed. The door shut and sealed them inside. Danny's heart pounded so loud she missed Colt's instruction. Larkin prodded her in the back and she sidestepped down the hall, following blindly as her eyes sucked up the inky dark. She couldn't see more than a foot in any direction. The end of the rifle blended into the shadows, and Colt was more a feeling than a person, two steps away. Colt tapped her on the arm, and she jumped. He motioned toward the kitchen, two fingers up and to the right. He wanted her to follow. She nodded and fell in step behind him. Her back grazed the wall as they ducked inside the commercial space. What she wouldn't give for some fancy military gear. Back at the university, Larkin probably had access to all sorts of crazy stuff like night vision goggles and scopes. Colt stopped a few yards into the kitchen and leaned back against the wall, handgun up and ready. Danny followed suit. They stood in the darkness, waiting while the frustration built and their eyes adjusted. After a few minutes, the kitchen work surfaces separated from the dark beyond, and Danny could make out enough to navigate. Colt motioned for her to clear the south corner, and she took off, ducking behind a long prep surface to investigate the metal shelving beyond. Everything appeared more or less intact. No turned-over shelves, no empty cans of food thrown about. Vandals hadn't turned it into a trash can. She worked her way slowly through the gloom, relying on what little light filtered through the gaps in the plywood out front to see. It wasn't much. A person could be hiding practically anywhere, and Danny wouldn't see him until almost too late. But she came up empty. No people in her little corner of the kitchen. Colt found her waiting where they first separated. Anything? His whisper cut the silence like a shout. No. Good. The rest of the kitchen is clear. Bathrooms, too. Larkin approached a moment later.
Seating area is clear. The place is empty.
Danny exhaled in relief. They found somewhere to hide at least for one night. She didn't know what about the place made Colt want to stop, but she was damp, tired, and ready to relax for a few hours. Colt flicked on a flashlight and handed it to Danny. Start searching the kitchen for food and supplies. Start at one end and be systematic. Go through every cabinet, shelf, and cardboard box you can find. Danny nodded. What if I find something? If we can use it, put it on the prep table. We can sort it there. While Colt and Larkin went to gather everyone still inside the Humvee, Danny set to work, following his instructions. She started with the prep area, opening doors and drawers, one after the other. Nothing but pots and pans and every kind of baking dish ever made. The top racks held serving plates and bowls and saucers, but no food. She spun around in frustration. Where was it all? Danny had never been inside a kitchen of this scale. Most of her food prep experience came from the nasty counter at her mother's or Gran's tidy little kitchen before she got sick. They didn't have more than 5 feet of counter between them. This place was enormous. She thought about what it must be like, full with cooks and waiters running around. Where would they keep the food? Panning the flashlight around the space, she paused on a giant metal door at one end of the kitchen. A fridge and freezer? Danny approached with caution. Everything in there was probably rotten and disgusting, but she had to know. She wrapped her hand around the handle and brought her arm up to shield her nose from the smell. The door opened with a sucking sound, and Danny gagged. Smell wasn't the right word. Putrid, nasty stench from the depths of hell was more like it. Coughing and hacking, Danny advanced into the room with her sweatshirt tight against her nose. It took all her self-control not to throw up. At one point, it had been a fridge. Now, black and moldy lumps of produce off-gassed on metal shelves and milk curdled in glass jars. She grimaced as she stepped farther inside. There had to be something of value in there. Not everything rotted in a month. The room was still cooler than the rest of the place. It couldn't be all bad. Danny ran the flashlight beam over each shelf, pausing if anything showed promise. A wheel of cheese still encased in wax. She didn't know if it was edible, but it was worth a shot. 3 sacks of potatoes on the bottom shelf. A bag of onions. A handful of things that looked like fat white carrots. A root vegetable? One of those things she'd heard about in books but never seen? She grabbed the bundle and tossed them, along with everything else remotely passable, onto an empty cart. It wasn't much, but they could get by for a few days on what she found. As she wheeled the cart out, the rest of the crew piled into the kitchen. Doug stood in front of the prep counter, rubbing his shoulders and back. The poor guy was too big to cram down around Harvey's feet, and thanks to the river crossing, most of his clothes were still wet. Melody held Lottie tight to her chest as she looked around the space. Ever since the run-in with the people on the street, she'd been silent. Danny didn't know if she'd been in some sort of denial about how bad things could be, but she hoped Melody would snap out of it. Harvey and Gloria and Will stood off to one side, huddled in a sad little group. Everyone looked beat down and out of sorts. Danny pushed the car up to them, all with a smile. It's not much, but I think we can make some of this work. Melody wrinkled up her nose. What's that smell? Rotting vegetables, mostly. I found all this in the fridge. It's as big as a house. Doug nodded as he rubbed a kink out of his neck.
Commercial kitchens are massive. Have you found the dry goods yet?
Not yet.
I'll look for them.
Danny smiled in thanks and watched as he sauntered off toward the metal shelves on the other side of the kitchen. She was tired and frustrated and rethinking leaving Eugene. But Danny knew it had been the right decision. They might be cold and wet and hungry, but they were out from under Jarvis's control. He couldn't come after them across the river. It might be the hardest thing any of them had ever done, but hitting the road would turn out to be the best call. She knew it. Everyone set to work as quickly as possible, while they could rely on daylight to mask their flashlights from passers-by outside. Gloria and Melody made makeshift sleeping areas in the restaurant, using the cushions from the booths and tablecloths from the laundry. Harvey helped Doug cart dry goods over from the shelving and stage them on the prep table. Larkin found a tarp in the supply closet and used it to cover the Humvee. It wasn't perfect, but it would give them decent cover when night fell. Colt stood in front of the deep fryer with an empty jug and a scowl. Danny walked up to him. "Don't tell me you want to cook with that stuff. It's got mold growing all over it." He shook his head. "Not cook, but we need to bottle it somehow." Danny raised an eyebrow. "What for?" "You'll see. Look around for some sort of funnel." Danny couldn't find a funnel, but she came back with a roll of heavy-duty aluminum foil. "I figure we can make one." Within 5 minutes, they had fashioned a funnel out of the foil and set it up inside an empty apple juice jug. Colt opened the drain valve on the bottom of the fryer and drained enough oil to fill that jug and 5 more besides. When they finished, he stood back and smiled. It might just work. Danny waited, but he didn't explain, and she wasn't going to press him. Whatever he needed nasty used cooking oil for, he could have it. As the sun began to set outside, everyone collected around 3 tables Melody had pushed together. With Gloria's help, the pair of women had assembled a veritable feast. Crackers and cheese and still edible oranges. A massive can of beans and spiced apples. It might as well have been a Christmas goose and hot stuffing like Danny read about last year in school. They were lucky today. Gloria held up her glass of water, and the table fell silent.
"I want to thank Colt and Larkin for all they've done to get us this far. I didn't appreciate how difficult leaving Eugene would be. Without the Humvee or Larkin's driving skills, we would never have crossed the river. Without Colt's quick thinking, we wouldn't be sitting around a table eating and drinking and being merry. So thank you."
Larkin held up his hand.
"No thanks necessary."
After everyone took a drink, Larkin leaned back in his chair. He glanced around the table, and a slow smile spread across his face.
"How about we lighten it up a little, huh?"
He pointed to Colt.
"Favorite song, go."
Colt broke into a grin.
"Friends in Low Places."
He pointed to Melody.
"Your turn."
She stammered, and her cheeks turned red. "You'll laugh." Larkin drummed the table.
"Out with it."
"Total Eclipse of the Heart." She pointed to her brother. "Your turn."
"Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge."
Doug pointed at Harvey.
"You're up, Wilkins." "Anything by Bob Seger."
Larkin waggled his finger.
"Pick one."
Harvey glanced up at the ceiling.
"Traveling Man, I guess. Will, how about you?"
"Anything by 21 Pilots."
Will beamed. But most everyone around the table drew a blank.
"I don't even know who they are."
Larkin shook his head.
"Shows how old I'm getting."
"Not as old as some of us."
Gloria smiled.
"For me, it's Coal Miner's Daughter."
Danny swallowed as Larkin pointed at her. She didn't know what to say. "I don't really have a favorite song."
"Oh, come on, there has to be one."
She thought about the music her grandmother used to listen to. Gran always used to listen to musicals. She had an old record player we listened to on Sunday afternoons. Danny smiled. "I always liked the one in Guys and Dolls." She paused as she sang it in her head, trying to remember the title. "Luck Be a Lady, I think."
Larkin nodded. "Impressive, one of Frank's best."
"How about you, Larkin? What's your favorite?"
"Me? Oh, I'm a Kenny Rogers guy through and through. The Gambler. That's my all-time favorite."
Colt leaned back in his chair and looked around.
"So we've got a few country fans, a rocker, a cheesy pop lover, and a surprising throwback to the standards.
He smiled at Danny, and she tried not to blush. Larkin might not have meant to, but thinking of her grandmother made Danny grateful for everyone sitting around the table. She didn't choose this ragtag family, but that's what they had grown to be. Leaving as a group had been the right call. As everyone finished dinner, Colt excused himself.
"I'll take first shift tonight."
Danny spoke up. "I can do it if you want to sleep."
He shook his head. "No, you get some rest. I couldn't sleep if I tried."
He picked up a rifle and checked his handgun in his holster before walking toward the front of the restaurant.
"Do you think we'll be safe tonight?"
Melody's question voiced the fear percolating in Danny's stomach. Larkin shrugged.
"Only one way to find out."
Chapter 12. Colt. Chili's, Springfield, Oregon, 11 p.m. The tenuous nature of their existence hit Colt full force as he peered out into the dark. Thanks to the restaurant, they were able to eat and drink and sleep for the night, but it wasn't permanent. The lack of lookout positions drove him crazy.
He'd been all over the damn restaurant, trying to find somewhere to set up for a while.
Nowhere worked. The few gaps between the front windows served as a decent vantage point during the day, but were useless at night. The back was all metal and concrete block. What they needed was height. A little elevation and one or two people could maintain passable security. A one-story restaurant with solid doors and nooks and crannies everywhere wasn't the best option, not by a long shot. He eased the rear door open and squinted into the night. Clouds floated across the moon and cast an eerie glow across the parking lot. At least he could see. The door closed with a click behind him and Colt stood still, a dark figure against the beige paint of the wall. Something about the place was too good to be true. Why wasn't it looted? The location in a mostly residential area, the boarded-up windows? He wasn't sure either counted as sufficient deterrence. Maybe no one as desperate as the people they'd seen downtown had stumbled across it. They were a long way from the woman crying in the street. He thought about Melody and her inability to process this new reality. What she didn't understand was that there could be no more charity. Colt's run-in with the father-daughter team of the day before made that clear. Desperation had kicked in for everyone. He pushed off the wall and eased into the parking lot, scanning every few steps in a 360-degree circle. As a SEAL, preliminary scouting wasn't his specialty. He never patrolled an area, attempting to keep it secure. He went in, did the job, got out. Sticking around wasn't a part of the plan. He hated patrol. Too many variables, too many avenues of attack. Colt walked the perimeter with quiet steps, searching for a place to set up. A tree 30 yards across the lot held promise. So did a spot just behind the restaurant's sign near the road. He could get comfortable, hide behind the unlit sign, and watch. He circled the restaurant and paused. A rustling sound came from the back near the Humvee. He faded into the shadows like a ghost and moved closer. The tarp. It shook and shimmied on top of the vehicle. Colt lifted the rifle and held the scope to his eye. Damn. Too close to use as a sight. Perfect if he needed to shoot an apple off the Humvee's hood, but terrible to find the source of the noise. He slung the rifle over his shoulder and pulled out his SIG. Crept another 5 feet along the building's edge.
Told you! It's military!
Shh! They've got to be inside. Colt froze. Two unidentified males. He couldn't tell if they were kids or old enough to be dangerous. He hugged the wall and focused on their voices.
They gotta have guns! We should bust in there! Check it out!
You got a death wish? They probably already know we're here. Colt kept the smile to himself. At least one of them had a brain.
Let's just get inside and check it out.
Damn it. He couldn't let that happen. Colt stepped out of the dark.
You're damn straight I know you're here. Now leave.
He leveled the gun at the shape moving about around the vehicle.
You don't look military to me.
The shape shuffled closer and separated into three.
shit. Although they couldn't have been older than 20, what they lacked in age they made up for in size. The one in front outweighed Colt by a good 50 pounds, a big, hulking beast of a kid. Colt pointed the barrel at his chest. Guess you've never met a seal.